In about 15 minutes, there is going to be a siren. And I want everybody to stand up for the siren for the following reason. Even though there is a difference of opinion halachically whether you're allowed to stand for that siren or not, because according to some opinions, it is chukos hagoyim. Standing for a siren or standing in general in silence in memory of someone is not a Jewish way of remembering people who have passed away. And anybody who thinks that it is a Jewish way has to have their heads examined. There's never been any custom, nothing in Jewish history where that was a Jewish way of remembering people. Even though inevitably this time of year usually comes out around Parsha Shmini, and there it says that when Aaron HaKohen heard of the death of his two sons, Vayidom Aaron, Aaron was quiet. And inevitably I see that someone convolutely connects that to standing quiet at a siren or whatever, and as if Aaron HaKohen stood at attention in memory of his children, which is absurd. Aaron HaKohen, Vayidom Aaron, just means that he could have complained, he could have cried out, he could have questioned God, and he didn't. He kept quiet, he thought, why is God doing this to me? He listened instead of talked. That's what the Torah means. Okay, in any case. So there are opinions that one is prohibited to copy the ways of Goyim, and this is a way of Goyim, and even though it's not a religious thing, it's a secular thing, there are those that hold that it's prohibited. However, there are many poskim who hold that it's not prohibited. It's not necessarily a Jewish way of doing it, but there's nothing wrong with doing it either. Reason being the following. Not everything that Goyim do is it prohibited for a Jew to do. I'll give you an example. I'll tell you a little secret. Goyim breathe through their nose. Now, therefore, it should follow that we are not allowed to breathe through our nose because it's copying the Goyim. But don't worry about it. Don't hold your breath. We are allowed to breathe through our noses. Why? Because I'm not breathing through my nose to be like a goy. I'm breathing through my nose for the same reason the goy breathes through his nose. It's very comfortable and extremely healthy. So I'm not copying the goy. I'm doing it for the same logical reason the goy does it. That's okay. To the point where, another example, that is brought down in halacha. Not everybody agrees with this either, but halachically, the majority of the poskim do say this is okay. Doctors wear white coats. Okay? And what about a Jewish doctor? Is a Jewish doctor allowed to wear a white coat? Or is he copying Goyim? Goyish doctors wear white coats, so a Jewish doctor maybe should not be allowed. The halacha is that he is allowed, according to most poskim. Why? Because the reason the goyish doctor wears a white coat is not for some kind of esoteric, religious, or irrational reason. There's a very rational reason why. It distinguishes him as a doctor. When people see someone in a white coat, either they know he's the ice cream man or he is a doctor. And they give him the respect due to a doctor and understand that he knows what he's talking about when it comes to medicine. And therefore, it is a very rational, logical thing for doctors to wear white coats. And therefore, a Jewish doctor is also allowed to wear a white coat. He's not doing it to be like a goy. He's doing it for the same reason the goyim do it, to distinguish himself as a doctor. Okay. Therefore, there are many that hold that standing at attention at a siren is not a religious rite. it is a very logical show of respect. You stand quietly and show that you are respecting the memory of the person who died. And therefore, it is not a religious rite. It's not something that doesn't have any logic to it. There is a logic behind it. And therefore, there are those that hold, many poskim that hold, that it is okay to do something similar to that. And therefore, standing by a siren in silence and memory is okay. Okay, now, no one holds that you must stand by the siren, right? Because, again, this country is a Jewish country. It could have found some Jewish symbol to do in memory of these people, like saying Mishnayos. Okay, that's too hard for most people. Say a Kapitel Tehillim. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Goyim say that. It's a Kapitel Tehillim. Right? You could say it in English. You could say it in Hebrew. Say it in Sanskrit, if you understand it. Or you could light a candle. That's also a Jewish way of remembering people. But standing at attention at a siren is not a Jewish way. Why did this country decide to do that? Because there are people here who won't say Tehillim. Because they have problems with that. So they had to do something that everybody could do. Right? Now, I don't know why they thought that Jews could stand silently for a minute. Right? That's something that everybody could do. Right? But in any case, somehow they had this idea that that was something everybody could do. And do it equally. Okay, so since it's not a Jewish way of remembering the dead, it would be much more effective to say a Kapitel Tehillim, learn a Mishnayos, light a candle, whatever. However, if you hold that it is prohibited to stand for the siren, like I said, there are opinions that say like that. Okay. Then nobody surprises people as to when the siren is going to be. It's going to be in a few more minutes. Everybody knows it's going to be at 11 o'clock. And therefore, if you hold that it's usher to stand, there is no reason in the world to be in public and not stand. Because nobody is going to understand why you're not standing. And they are going to assume that the reason you're not standing is because you don't care one bit about the memory of the people who died, that you should be able to be here. Which is a terrible, terrible message, which we will talk about after the siren. I just want to make sure everybody knows what's going to be here. One second. A terrible message. And therefore, Chilul Hashem is also something that's prohibited. And this is a Chilul Hashem, because if somebody sees somebody ignoring that siren, they are not going to say, oh, it's Chukas HaGoyim, that's why they don't stand. They're going to say they don't stand because they don't care. And they are not sensitive, and that's a Chilul Hashem. And there's no reason in the world why anybody shouldn't think that. Now, that does not give the right to the secular public to send photographers to Meyasharim and Geula, I'm sure, to chase after people who don't have any seichel, who don't stand. And by the way, not everybody who doesn't stand for the siren is doing so either from halachic reasons or for insensitivity reasons. I remember a few years ago, it was during one of the Gulf Wars. There was a tourist here from America who never heard of either was Yom HaShoah or Yom HaZikaron. He didn't have an inkling there was anything special about that day. He was in the middle of Geula, and all of a sudden, there's an air raid siren. Was his initial reaction, find a shelter, fast. So he started running. As he started running, he noticed that there were people running after him with cameras. He assumed that they were terrorists, so he kept running faster. He never intended not to stand for the siren. He just thought that there were people chasing him who were ready to kill him. In any case, so you can't always judge people on what they do as it looks. In any case. In my estimation, somebody who holds that it is usher to stand by the siren shouldn't stand, but he shouldn't be in public when the siren goes off. He can be in his house, close the windows and the shutters, right, and lie on the floor if he wants. But not publicly. And if you hold that you that it's not usher to stand, and you are in public, then you should stand. And I see that most Yidden, many times I was on my way to Beit Vegan on either Yom HaShoah or Yom HaZikaron, and everybody gets out of their car, from the most Haredi to the less Haredi, whatever, and stands up. So most people understand this idea. I'm sure they weren't standing up because they held that it was a mitzvah to do it, or you had to do it. I'm sure they were standing up because they didn't want to make a Chilul Hashem. Once you're standing up, she can say Tehillim. But let me tell you that for a Jew, not to say Lashon Hara for a minute, it's also something, believe me. Right? And for people not to talk for a minute is also something. So even without the Tehillim, there's a tremendous benefit over here. But the Tehillim is surely an extra added dimension. And therefore, since we are in public over here, anybody can walk in here, anybody can look in the windows. I tell the seminaries, whether they listen to me or not is a different story, that they're also public. Because anybody can walk in there at any time, and anybody can look in the windows, and people who see that they are ignoring the siren is a terrible Chilul Hashem, because they assume that the reason is that they totally ignore the memory of these people. And that is a terrible, terrible thing, even if it's not true. But that's the impression you give. You're responsible for the impression you give people also. So that is why when the siren goes off, I expect everybody here to stand up. And if you want to say Tehillim, Matov Umanoim, if you want to recite Mishnayos, you could do that too. Whatever it may be, if you want to have kavana that I'm not speaking Lashon Hara for 1 minute in memory of these people, I'm sure that that would help also. Okay. What I want to speak about after the siren goes off is why it is a Chilul Hashem to be insensitive to the memory of these people when everybody else is, again, whether this is the right time, the right way, or whatever, is irrelevant. Lamaisa, it has been established in this country that this is what people do. And people who don't do it are not understood to not be being doing it for any good reason. They are understood not to be doing it because they don't care. And that is something that's wrong. It's wrong hashkothically, besides the wrong, it's wrong in the impression that it gives to other people. Why it's wrong hashkafically, I will explain after the siren. Basically, the idea is the following. The root of all sin, says the Navi Yeshayahu, is Yoda Shor Kolnehu Vachamor Evus Ba'alav. An ox knows its master, and a donkey recognizes who feeds it. Yisrael lo yada, the Jewish people didn't know those simple things. They didn't have gratitude. If you want to recognize God, and you want to then come after you recognize the Ribbono shel Olam to serve Him, then the first basic feeling that a person has to have is gratitude. If you don't have any gratitude, you'll never recognize the Ribbono shel Olam. Because the way that we recognize God is that He is the ultimate good who does good. Hatov v'hametiv. And if you don't recognize good, and you're not, don't have gratitude, you're not grateful, then it's impossible to recognize God. And all sins come as a result of what animals know, what's it called? Animals know instinctively. To show some gratitude. This guy feeds me. At least I know where my food comes from. I know who my owner is. He takes care of me. An animal knows that. A human being who doesn't know that is impossible for him to have the connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why Amalek are pretty bad people. Right? You can say a lot of bad things about Amalek. Yet the Medrash says Amalek were called Kfuye Tova. Ungrateful people. That's as bad as you can say about Amalek. They're ungrateful. But that's the foundation of everything. All the rest came from that foundation. If you don't have any gratitude, if you're ungrateful, Adam HaRishon, the foundation of his sin was the fact that he was ungrateful. He said, the woman you gave me, she causes. Have a little gratitude. I gave you this woman to help you, to be your soulmate, your helpmate, and you blame me. She's the cause of your sin. You have no gratitude at all. That's worse than the sin itself. So gratitude is a tremendous foundation of Yiddishkeit. If you don't recognize good and you don't show appreciation for it, then you'll never recognize the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore, gratitude is not just to human beings, right? It has to do even with inanimate objects. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't hit the earth of Mitzrayim or turn the Nile into blood because of gratitude. The Nile, right, helped to save his life when he was a baby and made his basket float. He floated on the Nile. He hid the Egyptian in the earth, saved his life. So the earth of Mitzrayim deserved Moshe Rabbeinu's gratitude. He couldn't hit the earth. He couldn't make the water turn into blood. There's two things you see from that. One is that even inanimate objects, the earth, the water didn't feel anything. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have hit it, there was a make to the earth. But Moshe Rabbeinu had to show gratitude to things he benefited from. It had nothing to do with the object. It had to do with the subject. Moshe Rabbeinu could not do something that showed not being gracious, not being grateful. Ad kedei kach that not just to inanimate objects, even to Rishoyim. Moshe Rabbeinu was not allowed to go into war against Midian because the country of Midian basically gave him refuge when he ran away from Paro. Even though the Midianim deserved to be okay, even Moshe Rabbeinu could not go and fight against Midian. It was a mitzvah. They made the Jewish people sin. It was a mitzvah to take revenge. But since the people of Midian, the country of Midian, gave Moshe Rabbeinu refuge when he ran away from Paro, al tzakoras ato, because he had to feel a certain gratitude that would have destroyed his feelings of gratitude, couldn't go. He had to send Pinchas instead. Not only that, you have to show gratitude to things that don't even have intention to do you good, but you got some good out of them. It's not for the sake of the person you're showing the gratitude to. It's for your sake that you should not be an ungrateful person. There's a medrash that says, when Yisro said, how did you, to his daughters, how did you come home so fast today? Usually there were shepherds that pushed them away from the well and took the water first and made them wait. And the truth is that Moshe Rabbeinu came and saved them from the shepherds that day. And they were able to feed their or water their flocks earlier. They answered, Ish Mitzri Hitzilanu Miyad Haroim. Today, an Egyptian man saved us. So some learned that it's referring to Moshe Rabbeinu. I thought he was an Egyptian. And Moshe Rabbeinu was punished for that because he gave the impression that he was an Egyptian. But there's another medrash that says they weren't talking about Moshe. Moshe had told them that he happened to be there that day because he killed an Egyptian and Paro was looking to kill him, so he had to run away. So you know what they said? We have to feel grateful to that dead Egyptian because of him we were saved today by the guy who had to run away. Now, obviously, the dead Egyptian didn't get killed in order to save these women, right, from the shepherds. Right? He had no intention of doing that. He would have much rather not been killed altogether. So, but they had a certain amount of gratitude to this dead Egyptian, but because of him, they were saved. So even somebody who indirectly benefits you didn't have any intention. Still have to have gratitude. Still have to feel grateful. And even if the thing that you have to feel grateful to was just doing its job, just doing what comes naturally, but you benefited. You also have to show gratitude. We know that again from Moshe Rabbeinu. What was he, did he have to have gratitude to the water that made his basket float and the earth that covered up the Egyptian when he buried him in it? They didn't do anything special. If you put a basket on water, it floats. The water didn't do anything heroic, didn't do anything unnatural, did what it normally does. Same thing with the earth. But Moshe Rabbeinu benefited from it. Makes no difference if it did what it was supposed to do, what it naturally does, or it was some kind of miracle. I benefited from something. I have to recognize the good. I have to feel grateful. And not only great things. You don't have to recognize good only where it's something important. But even small things are important to recognize. And that I always learn from the Yontif of Tu B'Av. We celebrate a Yontif on the 15th day of Av. According to one opinion, what happened on the 15th day of Av was that they were able to bury Haruge Beitar. The people of Beitar were killed on Tisha B'Av, about 50-odd years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It was the last stronghold of Bar Kokhba. He died in Beitar. It was the nail in the coffin of Golus. They thought, even Rabbi Akiva thought, maybe Mashiach was in the guise of Bar Kokhba and he was coming soon, and the Golus would be very short, and the Lamaisa, it wasn't like that. Beitar fell. Hundreds of thousands of Jews were killed in Beitar, along with Bar Kokhba, and the Romans didn't let them bury the bodies. They were exposed to the elements. And somewhere I saw for about 3 years, somewhere else I saw for a year and a half, whatever it was, for a long time, they didn't let them bury the bodies. And finally, on Tu B'Av, on the 15th of Av, after a considerable amount of time, they were able to get to the bodies and bury them. And two miracles happened. One is that the bodies didn't decompose, and the other that they were able to bury them. And on that day, the rabbis made a yontif, which lohayu yamim tovim liyisrael kechamishasar ba'av u'kiyom ha'kipurim. There was no greater yontif than Tu B'Av. The girls used to go out and dance and make shiduchim that day. It always bothered me, what was the big deal? I mean, that for that you make a yontif? Because they were able to bury the bodies and they didn't decompose? These people didn't come back to life. There wasn't resurrection of the dead. We got that in now, so at least there's something to do with what we're talking about. And so what were they rejoicing about? If I was there, I would have made a fast day. But since two miracles happened, that they didn't decompose and they were able to bury them, I would have said you could eat 5 minutes early. But what's to make a yontif? What happened over here that was so happy? But the rabbis wanted to teach us there's a long gullus that's going to be starting. And if you don't appreciate little things, you're going to have a miserable life. So they wanted to train us that even little things are kedai to be happy about. There's no 99% is no good, but there's 1% good. The mice, they were able to bury these people. Their bodies didn't decompose. Be happy. Rejoice. Because if you only are happy for the big things, nothing will ever be big enough to be happy about. So if you're not happy for the small things, you'll never be happy for anything. So therefore, the even small things, a person has to feel grateful. He has to have gratitude to the Ribbono Shel'olam or to other people. And therefore, if in this country, for whatever reason, they set aside this day to honor the memory of people who gave their life defending Jews, defending this country. I told you last week that somebody who dies an unnatural death, especially somebody defending Jews and defending Eretz Yisrael, no matter what he was before that, first of all, we assume that before he died, he probably did tshuva. And even not, the death atones for the sins, and the person has a din of a tzaddik. And that it applies to Israeli soldiers who are killed in the line of action, that I heard from my Rebbe, from Rabbi Gifter. So that's how. He said that medrash that says what I just told you applies here too. So that's not my own connection. It's his connection. And therefore, this country, they set aside this day to remember all those soldiers and all those people who died in defending Eretz Yisrael, defending their fellow Jews, people who died in terrorist attacks. And to give the impression that you don't care, even if it's not true, and you have all these great reasons why this is not a Jewish thing to do and it's not the right day and it's Medina, whatever it is, but you give the impression that you are ungrateful is a terrible, terrible Chilul Hashem. Even the impression is a Chilul Hashem. And the person should be grateful. So there's no reason why you can't remember these people today. There's no reason why you can't say a Perek Tehillim or a Perek Mishnayis in their memory. There's nothing usher about that. There's nothing wrong with remembering somebody who you owe gratitude. We all owe gratitude. Because none of us, I guarantee it, would be living here if this country was in the hands of Jordan. Whatever you'll say, right, that we wouldn't be here. So the fact that there's a country and the fact that there is, that the country's been what's it called, defended by an army, right, who have protected the lives of the people who live here and made it possible for us to live here, we owe a tremendous amount of gratitude both to the Ribbono Shel Olam, but also to these people, no less than Moshe Rabbeinu owed gratitude to some water and some earth. And therefore, to give the impression that you don't care, that it totally is not your business, is a terrible, terrible Chilul Hashem. And along with showing gratitude and feeling that gratitude to the memory of people who gave their lives for the sake of other Jews and defending Eretz Yisrael, you have to have gratitude that you live here. Right? Okay, so now these people enabled you to be here. So what's the big deal about being here? So at the same time, you should think about what is the mila of living in Eretz Yisrael. It happens to be in this coming week, Sedra. Torah says, V'avdil eschem min ho'amim liyos li. I separated you from the nations of the world to be mine. If you separate yourself from the nations of the world, then you're mine. And if not, you belong to Nebuchadnezzar. And we've over explained that, and I'm not going to go into great detail, but just a simple idea. What does that mean, that if you separate yourself from the nations of the world, you're mine, and if not, you belong to Nebuchadnezzar? Our mission in this world is to be a mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. We are supposed to be a empire of kohanim and a holy nation. We've explained what that means is a kohen is God's representative to the Jewish people. He's the one who teaches, he's the one who atones, he's the one who makes the sacrifices. He is God's liaison to the Jewish people. We are the Kohanim of the world. We are God's representative to the nations of the world. We're an Or Lo Amim. We are a light to the nations of the world. That's what we're supposed to be. And in that respect, how do we represent God to the nations of the world? By being a Goy Kadosh, by living a life of holiness. Kedoshim tiyu, ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. You have to be holy because I am holy. And the Medrash says, Yochol kamoni, I might think you have to be like me. Talmud lomar, ki kadosh ani Hashem, kedushasi lemala mikedushaschem. My kedusha is greater than yours. And similar to that, we find that Paro told Yosef, right, no one will move a leg and an arm in Mitzrayim without your permission. Right? I might think that you're equal to me, Paro said. No, ani Paro, I'm still Paro. Gedulasi lamala megedulascha. My greatness is greater than you. Now, on the surface, that medrash is very difficult to understand. Because it seems to be that God is telling us that he's holier than we are. Right? God has to tell us, look, you may think you're as holy as me, but I'm holier than you. I need a pasuk to tell me that. I might think I could be as holy as God. And we learn it from Paro. Paro told Yosef, don't get carried away. Right? Nobody's going to move an arm and a leg in Egypt without you, but I'm greater than you. That's how God functions, like Paro. Therefore, I think that the Medrash means something completely different. I might think that we are supposed to be like God, meaning God's holy, and we're supposed to emulate him, and we're also supposed to be holy. Two parallel holinesses. It's not what the idea is. But let's examine what happened with Paro. Paro told Yosef, no one is going to move an arm and a leg in Egypt without your okay. I am making you powerful here. But don't think that you're a parallel power to me. There's Yosef the power and Paro the power. No. Gedulasi lemala migdulascha. Your greatness emanates from me. You are my representative. You are Paro's representative. That people are going to listen to you not because you're Yosef, but because you are a representative of Paro. Same thing over here. Don't think that your holiness is a parallel holiness. There's the holiness of the Jewish people. There's the holiness of God. No. My holiness is above yours, meaning yours emanates from me. Your holiness is my holiness because you represent me. That's what it means. It comes to define what our holiness is. It's not just something that's like God, but it is a representation of God's holy. We represent God in the world. And therefore, if we separate ourselves from the nations of the world, not just from the bad ones, from the good ones, and we live a life of holiness, not just a life of morality. Goyim have a share in the world to come if they live a moral life and they keep their seven mitzvahs. They don't have to be holy. They just have to be moral. But we have to be holy because we represent God and we represent His holiness. So it's not enough for us just to be moral. Halavai, we should be moral. The Navi spends a lot of time speaking to Jews about not murdering, not stealing. So they ask, the Kuzri asks, I mean, we have Shabbos, Kashrus, we have all these big things. Why speak to us about things that even Goyim have to do? Not murder, not steal. And he basically says, because if you're not a mensch, you can't be holy. First you have to be a mensch. First you have to know not to lie, cheat, steal. After that, then we can talk about Shabbos and Kashrus, and you can be a holy person. But if you're not a person, dogs can't be holy. Right? And if you're not moral, and you're not a mensch, then how can you be holy? Anshe Kodesh Tiyunli. First you have to be a mensch. Then you can be Kodesh. So the Navi says, as long as the Jewish people aren't doing the basics, what am I going to talk to them about Shabbos and Kashrus? Let's talk about murder and stealing. So, we have to be more than moral. A goy can be moral. He has to be moral. We have to be moral plus. We have to be Kodesh. So if we separate ourselves from the nations of the world and we live a holy life, then we represent God, your mind. If we don't, our goal is to be the Mikdash. We are the Mikdash. We are the place where God's presence is evident in this world. What is that? The temple. The temple is not the place where God resides. He resides in the heart of every Jew. V'shochanti v'socham. The temple is only the means to have God's presence reside within us, on us. We're God's temple, says in the Pasuk. We are the Mikdash. We are Heichal Hashem. We are the place where God resides in this world. So if we live a life like that, then we represent God. If not, we belong to a very exclusive club headed by Nebuchadnezzar. What did Nebuchadnezzar do? He destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Except he destroyed a Beis HaMikdash of stone and wood, and we're destroying the Beis HaMikdash of our heart. We're also destroying a Beis HaMikdash. If we don't live the kind of life we're supposed to live, and in order to enable us to create not only an individual life of holiness, we are a people. And we have to live as a people, a society of holiness, a mamleches kohanim. Not just a bunch of kohanim, but an empire of kohanim. So we need to be able to create a society that is holy. For that, the Rabban Hashem gave us Eretz Yisrael. Omad vayimodeid Eretz, God measured all lands, and he found no land more conducive to Klal Yisrael than Eretz Yisrael, and no nation more conducive to Eretz Yisrael than Klal Yisrael. We fit the land fits us. Why? Because we're a holy people who have a special relationship to God. And this is a holy land. That's not a great word to use these days, but in any case, this is a holy land that has a direct connection with God. So, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us this land. That is the purpose of Eretz Yisrael. The purpose of Eretz Yisrael is here we can best create a society where every aspect of life is holy. Everything. Everything we do here, whether it is physical, material, everything is a mitzvah of settling the land, becomes a mitzvah. And the land is a holy land, so everything we do, all of our material pursuits are supposed to be holy. And that is 3 times a year we go up to Yerushalayim to learn what it means to be holy, and then we come back to our homestead and put that holiness into practice in everything we do, whatever we are. Shoemaker, a tailor, a businessman, a farmer, whatever you may be. But do it in a way that's holy. How do you know? 3 times a year you go to Yerushalayim to learn. And that is what the Torah says, and we'll end with this. Lo yachmod ish es artzecha ba'aloscha leiros es p'nei Hashem elokecha shalosh pamim bashana. No one will covet your land when you go 3 times a year to Yerushalayim, Aliyah L'Regel, the 3 regalim. Now the simple meaning of that pasuk is that there's a problem of all the able-bodied men and older children leaving and going up to Yerushalayim 3 times a year. First of all, they don't leave their families for Yontif, so the wives and girls go along also. The entire family goes. And a woman has to be with her husband, and children should be with their father over Yontif. So everybody goes to Yerushalayim. There's one big problem. If everybody leaves and goes to Yerushalayim, there are no Jews in Eretz Yisrael except in Yerushalayim. They left their cattle, they left their homes, they left all their property, and there are nobody to guard it because all the soldiers have to be in Yerushalayim too. They're also Jews. So who is there protecting the homestead? Nobody. So it's a big chance for Goyim to come and say, we just come in and take it all. Take it all. So God says, don't worry. I'm going to make a miracle. And no one will covet your land when you go 3 times a year to Yerushalayim and it remain protected. The Gemara even says that sometimes Goyim came and they wanted to take, and bears and lions came and protected the property. So God will see to it, but it always bothered me. God didn't have to promise us that no one would covet the land. No one would want the land. All he has to tell me is nobody's going to take it. I don't really care if they want it or not. Just send the bears and the lions, right, and keep them at arm's length. Why does the Torah have to promise they won't want the land? The answer, I think, is the following. The Ibn Ezra explains, how can a person not want what somebody else has? How could you control that feeling? It's a natural human feeling. Somebody has a nice thing, I want it. The answer, says the Ibn Ezra, you only want things that you think are within your realm. But if you know they're outside of your realm completely, he gives the example of a peasant does not look at the king's daughter and desire her. He knows it's out of his league. See, it's not something that he could ever have, so he's not interested. It's only something you think that could be yours, that's in your league. I like to give a different example because I don't know too many peasants and I surely don't know many king's daughters, so doesn't really ring a bell by me. You have a doctor and a shoemaker who are neighbors. And the doctor gets the state-of-the-art ultrasound machine. And the shoemaker gets a state-of-the-art sewing machine. Do you think the doctor is going to be jealous of the shoemaker's sewing machine? I doubt it. What does he need a sewing machine for? And if he sews up his patients with a sewing machine, he's not going to be a doctor too long, with a white coat or without a white coat. Do you think the shoemaker is going to be jealous of the doctor's ultrasound machine? What does he need an ultrasound machine for? He knows what's in his shoes, feet, right? He doesn't need an ultrasound machine. So the doctor and the shoemaker are not going to be jealous of each other because it's out of their league. Says the Ibn Ezra, if I understand that whatever a person has in this world, God gives him to fulfill his mission in this world, and what you have is not what I need, and what I have is not what you need, then there's no place for us to be jealous of each other. It's only if we think that a person gets what he grabs in this world, then I want what you have and you want what I have because we think it's within our league. But if I really believe that God gives me what I need to fulfill my role, I don't need what you have. And you don't need what I have. That's the case. The Torah tells me the following. If you go to Yerushalayim 3 times a year, and you learn there how to live a holy existence, and when you go back to your farm, to your business, and you conduct it in a holy way, then the nations of the world will see that this land is conducive to people who live a holy existence. And they won't want your land, because they'll know it's not for them. Why in the world do they want a land that's conducive to holiness? Their concept of holiness is surely different than our concept of holiness. So why would they want it? But if you don't understand that, and you live a regular secular life in Eretz Yisrael, just like the Goyim, then why shouldn't they want the land? It's a nice land. And we live a secular existence, so why shouldn't they want it and live a secular existence? If we live like Goyim, then why shouldn't Goyim want it to live like Goyim? But if we live like Jews, Goyim don't want to live like Jews. And they'll see that this land is conducive to live like a Jew. Why would they want it? That's what the Torah is telling us. So if we want to be secure here, and we want that the Goyim shouldn't be killing each other to be able to have the rights to kill us and take our land, then if we live here the way we're supposed to, if we really appreciate what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, and then we really appreciate those people who gave their lives, that we should be able to have that opportunity, then we will both be grateful to the people who gave their lives and do something le'ilui nishmasam. And the greatest thing we can do is to live here properly, because then what they sacrificed for, we are accomplishing. And it's their schus. They gave us the ability to live here the way we're supposed to live here. So if we take this day and use it both as Hakaras HaTov, to be grateful to the people who sacrificed that we benefit from. Secondly, we were grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu who gave us the benefit from that. And we use it properly, then Emir Tzah Hashem will see the day when the Goyim will not be fighting over this land. They won't want it. They'll leave it and understand that it's ours. And then Emir Tzah Hashem will be ready to really celebrate, where everybody will celebrate the Yom Tif of the real Yom HaTzma'ut, which is B'vi Yasko Il Tzedek Meher of Yomein.